The title of today's talk is Potential and Failure. From the time we are tiny children, we get caught on the treadmill of potential and potential failure. The one brings excitation of accomplishment. And the other brings anxiety of failure. They are both made of fool's gold, the reward of doership. Biochemical resistance to spiritual receptivity and experiences of the miraculous get overshadowed. Society grooms us to want to accomplish. It's what they pay you for, to accomplish. People with great individual types of skills, like maybe a potential athlete with the ability to do tightrope walking or high jumping or speed or whatever, wrestling, whatever the skill, and that potential. Or as, let's say, an intellectual, someone who has high intellectual capabilities in mathematics and physics, or in mechanics, or any of those, keep getting fed that they're good at what they do. And therefore, they should be better, that they should be outstanding, outstanding. High expectation. And it starts very, very young, especially if a child shows any, let's say, unique capabilities, like they may be able to be a musician like Mozart, or someone who is fast at reading and comprehending, or mathematics in any form. Well, they get locked on this treadmill of expecting of themselves better things, greater things, more interesting, more rewarding things to do, like architects building monumental buildings and the expectation of that and the fulfillment of it. But at the same time, there is the counterpart called the fear of failure. And the two of them do the tango all the time. And what that does is keep them biochemically tense. One for excitation, the other great anxiety of failure. The failure one is always being tried to be repressed. Because if you have expectations of yourself, you certainly don't want to fail. But the anxiety of failure doesn't go away. It just buries itself a little deeper, and it plays with your biochemistry of resistance over and over and over again. This duo of potential and fear of failure, potential and fear of failure, and it starts from every child, you know, to be able to crawl up on a step, to be able to take a step, to be able to ring a bell, to go to school. How do we prime children to go to school? We keep telling them, when you're old enough, you'll get to go to school. When you're old enough, you'll be able to do what the big kids do. We keep priming them, exciting them. And then the torment of, well, if you're not a good little boy, you may not be able to go to school. You may not get good grades. And it's used as a threat against them. So what it does is it locks this treadmill of potential to failure. Potential and potential failure. Potential and potential failure. Watch the Olympics and listen to the stories of the training of Olympiads. It's the story of potential and potential failure, over and over and over again. But those sets of chemicals that drive that sensibility of potential and fear of failure are the keys to keeping you from trusting stillness, trusting the power of God, trusting soul. You have to practically be knocked out, like a scientist who's been trying to solve a scientific problem. He's working, and he's working, he's working at home, he's working at night, he's working in the office. He's just working his little potential to death. And his anxiety of failure is chronic. And one dark night in the office, he's this lone soul. He puts his head down on the desk because he can't think straight any longer. And bingo, bango, bongo. He's struck with an intuition. He's hit alpha wave. He's shut up the chemistry of potential and the fear of failure of potential. He shut it down temporarily. And alpha wave arrives, and so does a light message, the solution to the problem. Now, he may admit to his coworkers that that's what happened the next day. But on the other hand, he may not. And now he's compounded the problem because he doesn't want to be discovered as not having great potential in his skill field, in his field of expertise. Isn't he an expert afterward? Isn't that why he's getting paid such high wages? So yeah, it has some, let's say, harsh. Harsh. Problematic. Things that happen to people with great potential. But it doesn't matter if it's a tiny child trying to put his Legos together. It starts way back in Legoland. Where putting the Legos together is so important. Of course, putting a round peg in a round hole is pretty exciting too. And highly praised and rewarded. You, the doer, have done a good job. Oh, you made an A. You made a B. You made a C. Oh, aren't you clever? Aren't you getting writing good? Printing good? Of course, nobody can write anymore. If you don't know how to push a button on a computer, you don't know how to write. But it's indigenous to learning, expressing talent, developing talent, and fear of failure at getting better at skills, getting better at, let's say, just saving money, investing money, oh, whatever. It's reward and punishment, reward and punishment. The punishment is, what if you fail? You see, you're self-punishing before you're even punished. What if I fail? What if I can't do it? What if it goes wrong? What if? What if? What if? And so you go on with a Pandora's box of problems, all which carry biochemical reinforcement to tension, which keeps you from trusting spirit and God power. Look at the traffic, I'll never get in. I'll never get an advancement in the job. There's everybody else is so much better than I am. There are a million stories we tell ourselves that keep the chemistry of tension in the brain body so that we won't relax, trust God, and see it's all a love game. Oh, my. Our friend Kabir has a few things to say on and around the subject. There are seasons in the mind, great currents and winds move there. The true yogi ties a rein to them, a power plant he becomes. Winter, spring, summer, fall, these are pages in a book that advanced can turn to and impart. Order is a great benefit to the seeker. Otherwise, living in one's own house can become a walking through a marketplace where all the merchants keep shouting, "You owe me." That does not sound like much fun. And who could accomplish anything in all that noise? The mind is the marketplace. The marketplace of ideas, distractions, needy, wanty, fear and reward, imaginings. And we do it nonstop. Nonstop. It just goes on. Goes on. You don't have to bid it. It won't let you go. You have to cognitively, consciously stop it. Or it just rambles on. Like a tumbleweed rolling in the desert winds. Here, there, and everywhere. Thorny at best. You are sitting in a wagon being drawn by a horse whose reins you hold. There are two inside of you who can steer. Though most never hand the reins to me, capital me, so they go from place to place the best they can, though rarely happy. And rarely does their whole body laugh, feeling God's poke in the ribs. If you feel tired, dear, my shoulder is soft. I'd be glad to steer a while. Ah, yes, the soul and God would love to steer if you'd give them room. Well, the truth is they are steering, but you're not getting the message. And so you interpret the steering inappropriately as something you did. Something you accomplished, or something you did wrong. If God is the only doer, then what? I mean, it's kind of like canceling you out. You, the collection of beliefs, you, the collection of needs, you, the collection of potential. Your potential rests with God, not with your skills. Are you going to avoid a caving in road by your intelligence or by God's grace? Are you going to miss the flash flood as you cross a small creek that you don't know is coming? Or is it by God's grace? When there is extreme awareness that you didn't make the choice, you were somehow motivated to leave one half a minute later, one half a minute earlier, 1 second different, and something different happened. And if you would allow yourself to get off your high horse of doership you would realize that the timing was God's, not yours. The situation was God's, not yours. That your safety was God's, not yours. You know those near misses when somebody passes you and they don't see the car coming in the other direction and they want to cut in front of you to escape getting smashed? And you don't get killed and they don't get killed and the other driver doesn't get killed? Let me see. That was definitely your skill.
Yeah, it was your skill.
We can't recognize for more than a nanosecond that something miraculous just happened. And we immediately, egotistically, want to take credit for some odd reason. Occasionally, it dawns on us that maybe it was divine intervention. But normally, we can't even notice that. We can't notice that the bee coming across in front of us is on a flight pattern God designed. That the trees waving when you walk by. God does. Oh, I guess the wind just came up. What wind? There wasn't any other wind. Nothing else moved, just those couple of trees that you paid attention to. You see, the tension of expectation and the tension of fear of failure just plays this dance in our head constantly. Will I get lunch on time? Will I do this on time? Will I get that? Will I get this? Can I? Will I? Should I? On and on and on the dance goes, the wheels that keep us so tense, we can't allow ourselves to rest and trust. We're on the go. We're on the job. We're producing. We're skilled. We may not be as skilled as we should be. Da, 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 da. Back and forth between expectation and excitation, those chemicals, and then suddenly, fear of incompetency, can't, might not, you know, and another set of chemicals, but all of them barring receptivity to spirit and God power. So the job of spirituality is quit. Quit the job of potential and potential fear. It's a job. It keeps you very busy. It's a job. It's wearing you to your grave. Hurry and worry. Hurry. Hurrying to succeed and worrying you won't. What is hurry and worry? Just that, isn't it? Hurry and worry kill us, kill our receptivity to spirit. So, it's not if you have potential, It's not if you're going to fail with your potential. You're failing the test, which is trusting God, trusting Spirit. You're not supposed to become a great scientist. Oh, you may, but you're not supposed to. God may bring that about, but you bring it about. You make the company 20 years down the road that will hire you at a great salary because you're a great mathematician. How did the company get there? Oh, you built it somewhere in your fantasy. 20 years ago, you started building the company that would hire you at a very high rate and let you express your genius. Come. We don't really realize how stupid we are. How stupid that is to think that we had such potential that this company needed to hire us. But that place wasn't there 20 years ago. That job description didn't even happen until, you know, a year ago. The insanity of our presumptiveness is alarming. And in some ways, it's kind of charming when you see it in a two-year-old. In a two-year-old presuming he can lift his father off the floor. You know, little kid comes up, he's going to lift his daddy. Or a little girl who's going to bake cookies with the mother, but hasn't got a clue about what a cookie requires. Oh, I'm making cookies. Okay, honey. Let's start with an apron, shall we? Let's start with an apron and here are the measuring cups and the spoons, you know. And the kid will run to whoever comes in the door when the cookies are baking and exclaim how great they are at cooking, baking, making cookies. And of course, they don't want to hear that mother said, "Dear, I baked the cookies, you helped." So mother doesn't. Mother lets the kid have the accolades. And there we go. Over and over and over again. Encouraging the child by praising the child for things that they've done mediocrely, but they missed the carpet with the paint. So, you know, here we are. Well, God has been doing that forever with humans. And you would think, generation after generation after generation, that we'd get it. But we haven't. And so the incredible naivete that we walk around with, and it is naivete, just like the child who thought they baked the cookies or could lift daddy. They're naive. And we're just as naive as adults, that we're doing things of value or importance. We, the ego, us, are doing wonderful things, and we are scared to death that we might realize we're not so hot. There's a part of us that wants to be good at something, good at things, competent. And for some reason or other, we still haven't given God the credit. Not to the core. Occasionally, we're surprised. Occasionally, we see the miracle. And occasionally, we give credit to the miraculous. But is your whole day making room for God? Is your whole day realizing that the only thing that counts is what God is doing? That's a hard one to crack. You might say the chick hasn't learned how to crack the egg yet. Still pecking away at the inside. Don't I get credit for effort? No, you get credit for accomplishing nothing. You get credit for accomplishing nothing. Isn't that weird? Think about that. You get credit for accomplishing nothing. When we give God all the credit, the earth may stand still. When we finally can come to that time and place when God gets all the credit, and we are not the doer, and we're not the needer, and we're not, you know, we're not. God. Where's God in that phrase? We're the doer, we're not the doer. God. There's only one doer. And it is extremely challenging to digest that. You're not bad. Nobody's bad because they can't or haven't. But you're wrong. You're just wrong because you haven't finally got it. And that's what the whole trip of being reincarnated and reincarnated and reincarnated into extreme variances of potential and potential failure. And at the same time, someone whispering in the corner, God's the only doer. Generation after generation, there are records of that teaching available. And yet, it seems that generations of civilization still haven't got it. The Golden Age may move us closer, but have you noticed Golden Age yet? Have you noticed being the Golden Age? How many times have you sworn at the TV while you watched political things? How many times have you felt like running away to another country? Well, isn't it actually wonderful? Just kind of erase your history. Isn't it kind of wonderful to know that God is the only doer? 99% of you doesn't believe it. 1% of you does. And that's why we're here on repeat. Because it is so hard to see such complexity with our senses and believe that this is God, because our senses are interpreting things on a different frequency. I've often used the example of going to a theater where there is an extremely adroit set of actors performing an intense play. And what happens when you go into a theater and people are kind of milling about and getting ready to watch the play, you basically begin to see an auric field, if you do. And what happens is when the actors start acting and it's intense and they're extremely fine, what you see is a collective aura going to the actor. Everybody is engaged on the actor and its energy. But someone comes in late. Oh my God, can't they read a clock for crying out loud? And the aura gets fragmented on the side where there's the entry of the latecomer. And the latecomer knows that they are hated. And so they stoop down and try to be small and slide in and take a seat where they were supposed to have been 20 minutes ago. And slowly, slowly, the auric field heals itself and gets back to stage, following the act. Oh, then there's another latecomer, even later than the first. And now the disturbance is very disgusting. And so there's energy. Why can't you get here on time? Why are you disturbing? But you see that the auric field has been fragmented to a degree. But then it all settles down and we have complete focus towards the stage. At the end of the act, what happens? we clap. Why? To break up the connected auric field and return your aura to yourself, as opposed to engaged with the group aura. So this pattern of auric field connection is so subtle for people who don't see it, don't understand it. And you can be victimized by it by walking into a store or getting in traffic or anything. There is this auric energy of something happening that engages you. And if you're not aware of disengagement, then you get swept into it and you don't even know you have been. You don't even realize that you've been sucked in to some auric field of a place or an activity. I mean, watch people at games. They clobber each other. The people who are at a soccer game or something like that, they get in huge fights and they can kill each other. You know? One team against the other teams, just the people who are watching them, let alone the players. The players aren't fighting. It's the people who are watching who are so overwrought by watching people run up and down a field and identifying with that in such a way that they're willing to beat somebody up. I mean, when you think about it, it's so over the pale. It's so beyond Ananda. You wonder how it can happen. The way it happens is group auric energy. That's why it's important that people pick very clearly where they go, where there are groups. Because you're going to fall victim to auric energy if you're not careful. You can be swept up in it. You can go thinking you're neutral, and pretty soon you're screaming, "Get that ball, run down, down." You know. I mean, watch people at wrestling matches. It's scary. And what is it? It's an act. It's an absurd, staged act. Throwing somebody against the arena, you know, enclosure. It's mindless. But it's energetic. So what we have to understand is energy, energy, energy. Why is it be still? Why is it be still? Let the energy neutralize. Let the energy neutralize. Whatever the energy you're running on, let it neutralize. Expectation, excitation, let it neutralize. And children are encouraged to get more excited, more jumpy, more reward seeking. And here you are, the child of society's construction. So, why is the job hard? because it's been going on for generations and generations and generations. And the conditioning is extreme. It's very extreme. And we don't realize how extreme it is and how we don't understand we've been, let's say, conditioned by everybody around us. And that we do it too to children. Oh, you know, if you're a good little girl, you get. What's that? Conditioning, isn't it? Encouragement, we might say. Conditioning is the truth. Encouragement can be nothing more than conditioning. Oftentimes, children who play alone, you can see their behavior of intense desire to accomplish something, and then the anger when they don't succeed, and the excitement when they do. That's a pattern. It's a setup. It's the way the body is organized. And that's your trial, the body. The body is the trial. Can we put the body to rest and accept the energy of the soul? Quietly, very quietly. Well, that's the divine science of the soul, and it's not going to change. It's not going to change. And very few people realize that that's the work, is just simply overcoming the historical conditioning of soul and body, and body wanting to take command of soul. That's it. Beginning, middle, and end. Well, we're in a setup called the body, in a society that's a setup that doesn't understand it. And a few people who are waking up to the job at hand. So, we carry on. And understand that it's not going to happen without focus. It requires focus. Constant remembering, focus to center and rest and receptivity. That's the work. And in the end, whatever comes out of that will be a miracle. Okay.